Hey everyone, just a quick note before we get started. This episode was scheduled to come out this past Saturday, March 30th. Unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, we weren't able to release it when we wanted to. Today's episode was recorded last week, the last week of March. Stay tuned for our next episode coming out this Friday. Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Although parts of the country are still emerging from winter hibernation, there's no denying it. The spring racing season is upon us. We're celebrating the return to clear roads and warmer temps with a mini-series dedicated to some of the most iconic road races in the continent's history. Today in part one, we've put together an episode featuring the oldest race in North America. But first, staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the latest news from the roads, trails, and track. This is the rundown. So, Maddie.
Kate.
You got back from Florida a couple days ago. You were at a training camp.
I was.
How was it?
It was super nice. It was warm, which is, you know, huge.
Yeah.
Being warm.
Love being warm.
I kind of got a tan, but I don't tan very well. So unless I like walked up to you and said, hey, I was just in Florida, compliment me, no one would ever say, you know, you look tan.
I notice it.
Thank you. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. I felt like I hadn't seen the sun in 4 months.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
So you weren't the only Canadian down south last week. We had a couple of pretty amazing performances by our Canadian wheelchair men at the LA Marathon.
Yeah, sunny Los Angeles. Josh Cassidy and Tristan Smith finished first and second, respectively, at the LA Marathon. Cassidy's time was 1:31:47, and Smith came in a few minutes later, clocking a 1:38:33. Both of these guys are Paralympians, and they've dominated at a number of major races over the years, and they made their marks once again in LA on the weekend.
Yeah, go way to go for the Canadian wheelies. That's exciting. Not so exciting. In other road news, we learned that new Canadian marathon record holder Cam Levins will unfortunately be taking a step back from racing for a while due to an injury.
I was so sad when I saw that this morning. I was really excited to watch that race, as I'm sure lots of people were. But obviously, when you've, you know, put this much into training, you're kind of riding that fine line, and sometimes you fly a little too close to the sun, and things start to hurt. So Cam will not be racing London. He was hoping to lower his own national record of 2:09:25, but he's been dealing with some patellar tendonitis since he ran the New York Half Marathon a few weeks ago and doesn't feel like he could be ready to perform at the level he wanted to.
Yeah, so smart move, obviously, by Cam and his team, but bummer that we won't be seeing him at that London Marathon, which is notoriously very quick. So we'll be wishing Cam a speedy recovery. Moving on to trail news, two power couples from the ultra world each had a baby in the space of only a few days, which is exciting. Anna Frost and Ron Brazelton gave birth to their daughter Skylar on March 16th, and then Killian Jornet and Emily Forsberg had their baby a few days later.
Does this make the baby a good runner?
I think it has to.
I think it has to. I like skimmed a study the other day that suggested that genetics have nothing to do with endurance athletics, which I kind of just don't believe. I mean, that opinion holds a lot more water than just my own brain, but I feel like these are going to be very, very athletic children. Anyway, Anna and Emily are both superstars in the mountain running world, so these kids have good genes. Speaking of fast women, there are two Canadian women competing at the Barkley Marathons this weekend. Morgan McKay and Stephanie Case will both be racing the 100-mile event in Frozen Head State Park in Tennessee, which consists of 5 20-mile loops, and there's no course map and very little crew assistance. So there's actually no aid stations on the loop at all. You can only get help from your crew once you've completed a loop.
Right. And the Barkley Marathons are known for being pretty strange in general.
Oh, yeah. Like, so much secrecy. There's been suggestions that there's a third Canadian going. We're not actually sure who that Canadian is just yet. But, yeah, there's a ton of secrecy around the race. There's a ton of little, like, idiosyncrasies that go along with it. And it's an extremely challenging race physically. But I think one of the big draws beyond the physicality of it is just how unconventional it is.
Right. Totally. Yeah. So we know it's taking place sometime this weekend, but we won't know exactly when. And nor will the racers until an hour before the race director blows a conch shell.
Yeah, exactly. Conch.
By the way, if any of our listeners actually know how to pronounce this word, please let us know, because we're obviously struggling.
So no woman has ever finished all five loops within the allotted time limit of 60 hours. Although Stephanie did complete two loops at last year's event. So maybe the first female finisher ever will be a Canadian.
Super exciting.
Super exciting. Okay, on to track news. We've got a whole whack of Canadian Masters performances to talk about. Last weekend, Toronto's Earl Fee set two world records at the USATF Masters Championships in Iowa, the day after his 90th birthday. So he ran 130.76 in the 400 meters and 342.5 in the 800 meters. So talk about entering a new age group with a bang.
No kidding. That's a huge accomplishment. The World Masters Indoors Champs have been taking place all this week in Poland, and there have been some great results there as well. So it started on Monday with Simon Rayner of Toronto, who set a new Canadian M55 3,000 meter record of 9:41.54. Then yesterday, Carla Del Grande, also from Toronto, set a new world record of 108.39 in the women's 65 400 meter.
Yeah, Carla is a phenom. She's one of the most decorated Masters sprinters in the world. She holds multiple world records, even more Canadian records, and her range is pretty incredible. She's excelled at everything from the 60 meter up through the 400, and she's competing in the 200 meter final on Friday. So we will be wishing Carla and all of our other Canadian Masters athletes good luck through the rest of this championships. Yeah. A quick update here. Carla did, in fact, run her 200-meter final yesterday, and not only did she win a second gold medal, but she set a second world record of 29.73, which means that she is the first woman in history to go under 30 seconds in the 200-meter for the W65 age category. Congratulations, Carla.
Speaking of track and field, a topic near and dear to both of us.
Yes.
The Diamond League has axed the 5,000-meter. And this is kind of old news at this point, but we haven't talked about it here yet. And after following the decision, more and more people have come forward, especially like a lot of pros. And Athletics Kenya has also been very vocal about this decision. And people have come forward to discuss like just how unfair it is to athletes who compete at the longer distances. So the 5,000 is an Olympic event. And it not being in the Diamond League anymore will affect athletes' abilities to get points for the world rankings, which, as we've talked about before, is about to become very, very important to making the Olympics, and also their ability to achieve these new, very difficult standards. You know, not impossible standards, but these are times that you need a certain caliber of race to run.
Right. So, Maddie, what was the rationale here? Like, why did the Diamond League decide to get rid of the 5,000 meter at their events?
They're looking to make it a shorter broadcast, shorter and more fast-paced is, I believe, the direct quote. And they think that starts with taking away the longest race.
Right.
So the 3,000 meter will now be the longest event. But the truth is, the 5,000 actually, you know, you have the ability to cut out and cut back in. You can cut to a field event and cut back into a 5K. Yeah. You know, if all you want to watch is the last 800, if that's all you wanted to broadcast, you could very easily make that happen.
Totally.
Or also still run the 5,000 meter, but not put it on the broadcast. So athletes, I mean, they wouldn't get the visibility, but at least they'd have
the opportunity
to run in, you know, a world-class race.
Right. Well, good news is, athletes in the track world, as you mentioned, have been very vocal about this, and I think they're putting a lot of pressure on the Diamond League to reconsider their decision. And I'm not sure if that will actually happen, but at least people are speaking out about it. So hopefully we'll get that 5,000 that I love so much. I love to hate the 5K, but I would like to see it back in the Diamond League.
I've never run over 1,500 meters on the track, ever. Maybe a handful of times in a workout. So not that it affects me that much. Honestly, not that I have any desire to ever do it. But I care about track and field.
Right.
So I care about the 5,000.
Yeah, well said. So staying in the world of track and field, now that indoors is almost completely done around the globe, the outdoor track season is upon us. Yay.
Yay.
And
track is back.
Track is back. And it's starting with a bang because the Stanford invite is this weekend.
Yeah, it's stacked. So not Canadian, but actually a woman who's been very vocal about the 5K cut is Molly Huddle. So she's the American half marathon record holder, looking to take a stab at the American marathon record in London. in 5 weeks' time.
Yep.
And this weekend, she will be using the Stanford Invite 10,000 meter as presumably a tune-up race for that London Marathon. And she's going to be joined in that race with Em Sisson, who ran the half marathon in Houston earlier this year, ran only 5 seconds off of Molly's American record. And she's also debuting the marathon in London 5 weeks later. So super that's going to be a super spicy 10K.
Yep, totally.
And they've got a ton of really strong NCAA athletes in there with them as well. So their speed may not quite be where the NCAA women's speed is, but if we're looking at, you know, range, aerobic base, Molly Huddle's kind of the whole package. Yep. So that'll be a very fun race to watch. And then there's a ton of Canadians opening at Stanford. Like Charles PT is opening, Lindsay Butterworth is opening, Kinsey Middleton's going to run a 10K. Some Canadians who go to NCAA schools like Aurora Rinda. So there's a ton of different people to watch. And, you know, the Stanford times may not be all that impressive. It's usually more like a jumping off point. It is still only March, but it's exciting to see outdoor track and field.
Make sure that you check out Canadian Running Magazine online for updates on all of our Canadian performances. Yeah. That has been your rundown for this week. Maddie, we'll chat again soon.
You bet.
Every runner knows that the Boston Marathon is one of the oldest and most prestigious road races in the world. But there's another race, in Hamilton, Ontario, that proudly proclaims its status as the oldest race in North America. Around the Bay, or the Bay Race, as it is sometimes affectionately called, celebrates its 125th anniversary this year. If you haven't participated in this event, you've probably at least seen the race t-shirts, which bear the words "Older than Boston" in big lettering. And for good reason. Around the Bay hasn't only been around longer than the Boston Marathon, but it's also boasted some pretty remarkable results over the years. Olympians, Canadian champions and record holders, and yes, even winners of the Boston Marathon have graced the streets of Hamilton almost since Around the Bay's inception. Today we bring you 4 guests, all of whom have played instrumental roles in the success and legacy of Around the Bay. We speak with former race director Mike Sychenko, current race director Anna Lewis, Olympian and Around the Bay veteran Krista Duchesne, and a very special, if unconventional, race supporter, Tim the Grim Reaper. We start today's episode with Mike Sychenko. Mike served as race director for Around the Bay for over 15 years, from the late 1990s until 2015. A former member of the Hamilton Police Force, Mike laughs when I ask him how he first got involved in the race.
It's crazy, actually. Hamilton Harriers had taken over the race after, I think, just after the 100th anniversary. And the president, he ended up getting cancer the year after. So the Hamilton Harriers Running Club was kind of running it, and my wife was involved. So I just came and just started to go to some meetings. And you know what? You kind of get caught up in it. I guess my organizational skills got into it, and that's the way I kind of started.
And you were there for 15 years after that. Did you ever think you would be a race director for 15 years when you started?
Well, no, because, I mean, at the time I was a police officer, so I ended up retiring in 2001. And once I retired, basically the Around the Bay was just like a group. So we incorporated, and we later got a grant from the Ontario Trillium Foundation. And that gave us the money to get an office and to pay a full-time race director.
During Mike's tenure as race director, Around the Bay saw a drastic increase in participation and now routinely sells out at 10,000 runners. Mike made some significant changes over the years to ensure Around the Bay's position as one of the most prolific race weekends on the continent.
Yeah, actually, when I started, we had maybe, you know, 3,000 runners. And my attitude, or, you know, my mantra is, if you got to spend money to make money. And, you know, to start off with, you know, publicizing the race and everything is great, but you have to build it from the ground up. And that's what we did. And probably one of the first things that we did is maybe just 2001 or two, can't remember the exact year, but the championship came out.
Mike is referring to the chip timing system that is either adhered to your race bib or attached to the laces of your shoes in major road races.
And this was all new technology. And we went and to Sports Stats, and we were probably one of the second or third races in Canada to use the championship. And using new technology really helped build it up. And then the race used to be run outside, or we finished at Sir John A. Macdonald High School. So we spoke to the mayor of Hamilton, Bob Morrill, and we ended up going into the Hamilton Convention Center. So, you know, we just tried to do things to update things and make things more modern.
So you've evolved with the times and brought this modern technology to the event, but I know that you've been interested in the history of Around the Bay for a long time. Can you share some of the pieces of that history that you find most compelling?
Sure. Yeah, actually, that probably before I even started as race director and I was just sitting on the committee, I got really involved in the history and I was researching it. And I met a lot of families who were related to the early runners who I'll mention shortly. But I actually got to see like the winning silver cups that they won and, you know, some of the paraphernalia that they wore. But what's really interesting, Hamilton back in the 1900s was like a running mecca. You know, the best runners, you know, in North America basically were from Hamilton. And, you know, John Caffrey was from Hamilton, William Shearing was from Hamilton, and Fred Hewson was from Hamilton. And in 1900, they went to the Boston Marathon and placed first, second, and third. So three Hamiltonians, you know, won the Boston Marathon or placed first, second, and third. And then John Caffrey went back again the next year in 1901, and he won the race again. And the second place finisher was William Davis from Six Nations. And William Davis ended up being the trainer for Tommy Longboat, who won the Boston Marathon in 1907. And Tommy also won the Bay Race in 1906. James Duffy won Boston in 1914. You know, Tommy Longboat in 1907, John Caffrey in 1900 and 1901. So there are a lot of, you know, Hamilton runners who have won the Boston Marathon and the Bay Race.
Right. So speaking about that local connection, what is the importance of Around the Bay to the community of Hamilton?
Well, you know what? The race has grown over the years, and it's very important, to, you know, to the local community. I mean, where are you going to have 10,000 people come to Hamilton in the, you know, at the end of March, when you know the weather is not the greatest? I mean, hopefully it's usually good, but you know, you get 10,000. That's runners, and then you get all their family and friends coming to the city of Hamilton, and you know, it's a great economic boost to the city of Hamilton. So it's very important. And you know what? I never realized how much the people, you know, knew about it. But usually after the race, my race committee and I would go meet up at a restaurant. We'd have breakfast there in the morning. And we walked in with the committee. And right away, the waitresses and the owners came right out and congratulated us on the Bay Race. And that was kind of, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, you knew something about the Bay Race. So it was quite nice.
What do you think it is? You know, obviously we've talked about this connection between Around the Bay and Boston, and a lot of people use that as sort of a precursor to their Boston or their other spring marathons. And we've talked about the fact that it has this really wonderful storied history. Are there other elements of Around the Bay that you think are particularly special when it comes to the event itself? I mean, what makes Around the Bay such a draw for people, do you think?
Well, first thing is the distance, 30 kilometers. you know, it's longer than a half marathon, but it's shorter than a full marathon. So it puts it in a, you know, in a unique spot when you're, you know, you're training in the spring. It's a good distance to run. The course is a loop course. So, you know, you start and finish. Probably one of the nicest thing is you finish right in First Ontario Center or First Ontario Place it finishes in, which is great because you get a lot of the spectators come out. Like most races, you know, you bring spectators, but they don't want to stand outside and watch the race. Well, now all the runners can bring their family and friends and kids, and they can stay inside and they're warm and they can watch the finish. So, you know, it's not only the course, but the start finish line. Some of the unique things we have on the course, which has been going on for years, is like on Beach Boulevard, we have, you know, people from the households there, you know, even through generations, and they just sit out there and they got their pots and pans and they make noise and, you know, yell and scream and support the runners. And they're out there every year. You know, we have the Grim Reaper at the Hamilton Cemetery on York Boulevard greeting all the runners. you know, the runners just love just the special things that make the Bay Race unique.
I asked Mike about some of the biggest challenges he faced as the director of a race this large. He recounted one infamous story from the late 1990s that many runners still talk about. At almost exactly halfway through the course, runners pass over a lift bridge that goes up during the main shipping season to allow large ships and barges to pass through. Around the Bay generally falls early enough in the year that the shipping season hasn't begun yet. But one year, well, I think you can see where this story is going.
I mean, the lift bridge back in 1997, I think, went up. Yeah, actually, I was lucky. I was not the race director at that time. But I was there when it happened. And I remember the police pulling up to the finish line and saying, like, hey, the bridge went up. And about 300 people turned around because they figured, well, I've run halfway. I'll just run halfway back. So 300 people ran all the way back along Burlington Street the wrong way. So we made some split decisions and we kind of moved an ad hoc finish line and we let those 300 finish. And then later when the race director went through everything, all those runners were disqualified because they didn't actually run the course. But ever since that time, you know, we've dealt with the shipping companies and the steel companies and the Coast Guard and everybody else, just to let people know how important it is for the lift bridge not to go up. And happy to say it's worked out so far.
I asked Mike if he ever misses his role as the director of such a historic race.
Yeah, but you know what? It's been passed on to Anna Lewis. I mean, she is a fantastic race director. You know, like, I'm an old dog. she's up and coming and new. Like, she's with the times. She's an event organizer. She's trained to be an event organizer. She's smart. The things that she does, you know, for the runners. You know, I came back from a time where I kind of just winged it. You know, I was never trained to be a race director. So we just came along and, you know, we built it up. And right now it's in Anna's hands. And you know what? I couldn't feel better or think of anybody else that would deserve it better than Anna.
How will you be celebrating the 125th anniversary this year?
I will probably be down at the finish line and maybe have a drink. And you know how runners like to have a beer.
Well, and I know that Merit Brewing has partnered with the race this year, and they're making 125th anniversary special brews, I understand.
It's actually bringing back a tradition because, you know, of having beer at the race because, you know, years past, you know, we used to have, the runners could have a beer at the convention center. So this is, you know, something that's not new, but at least it's starting back up again.
Well, Mike, I'll be sure to look for you beer in hand at the finish line. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Thanks so much.
You heard Mike talking about passing the race director torch onto Anna Lewis. Anna worked with Mike for a number of years at the St. Joseph's Healthcare Foundation, a charitable organization that raises funds for the Hamilton-based hospital. St. Joe's is also the main charitable partner of Around the Bay. I caught up with the very busy Anna a few days ago heading into this weekend's race.
In 2005, I started at St. Joe's Foundation, the local hospital in Hamilton, as the Director of Special Events and Community Partnerships. And one of the first things that they asked me to do was to sit in on a meeting with the Around the Bay. And at that meeting, they were talking about a partner, having a charity partner. And so I came in at the right time. And we started that relationship in 2005, and it's been growing ever since. So I've worked at St. Joe's for 11 years. And when Mike Zachenko, the past race director, was ready to step down, we just had a little conversation. And we've worked together for 11 years. He knew that I was passionate about running, which started because I was working at St. Joe's and around the race a lot. And so it was just an easy transition. He said, you know, would you be interested? I said, absolutely.
Anna had actually never run around the Bay before coming into her race directing position. She spent lots of time working out on the course and at the finish line and was inspired year after year by the energy from the participants. She finally decided to celebrate her Around the Bay racing debut by live tweeting her experience in 2016.
Once I became race director, I knew that was the first question everybody would ask. So I said, you know, I have to run the course, and I did it twice. And I thought I'll do it as a promotion. I'll highlight the different aspects of the course and highlight parts of Hamilton that everybody needs to come and see. And so I thought that was a great way to introduce myself as the race director, but also highlight the course and the race and why everybody should participate.
So for those who haven't raced around the Bay before, can you talk us through the course and give us some context as to why this is such a challenging event? So, you know, there's a lot of comparisons made between Around the Bay and the Boston Marathon. And I think, you know, rightfully so, there's a really deep and storied relationship between those two events. But Around the Bay, I mean, it epitomizes a Canadian race. It's tough, it's gritty, you can get any kind of weather. So can you tell us some of the really notable aspects of the course?
For sure. I think there's so many great points about the race. It's unusual distance. So it's a 30K, so more than half a marathon, but less than a full. So it's a great distance that is unique. There's not that many races that are at this distance. But then also, as you said, the history, you know, dating back to the early days, there were many that won the Around the Bay that went on to win Boston or went on to become Olympians. And so Around the Bay still is a training race for many of them. Last year, Krista Duchesne came in second in our race and then came in third in Boston. And she did use this race to train. And I think, you know, training in the winter helped her do so well in Boston. And also training in the winter shows how we are so strong in battling Canadian winters. You really do have to have a great spirit and want to be out there. So in the course is quite unique too. So the first 10K, I would say, is pretty flat. It's in the industrial part of Hamilton, but that's what Hamilton is. It's a steel town, and that's, you know, part of our history and part of the city. So I think it's important to have that part in our course. The second part of it is the 10 to 20 is on Beach Boulevard, and there's such great community support there. We have residents who come out with their pots and pans and wooden spoons and just cheer on the runners throughout the whole Beach Boulevard. And so it's been named actually Tin Pan Alley because everyone does come out and do that. So again, you know, I think that's unique in that they just came up with it themselves. It's organic. Again, that's Hamilton showing its pride. The last 10K, so 20 to the 30, is a lot of rolling hills through Burlington. So our race, again, is unique in that it goes through two different cities, Hamilton and Burlington. And so there you have a challenging set of hills leading up to Valley Inn Road around the 26K mark. And that's had many comparisons to Heartbreak Hill in Boston. Again, it's near the end, so it really tests your ability to stay strong and stay focused. But after you conquer that hill, you have a nice, easy downward slope to First Ontario Center. And again, that's not common to finish inside an arena where we announce your name, there people are cheering, you're on the screen. So it's a great experience, we think, for a participant as well.
Your event has a real commitment to giving back to the local community. So can you tell us a little bit more about that fundraising aspect?
Yeah, so for the 125th anniversary, we thought we'd do a few new things. And one of them was to open up the charity partner program. And so what we thought we would do is invite five charities to be charity partners for this year. And then we'll see how that goes and perhaps open it up even more in subsequent years. But we do feel that there's so many people that want to raise funds, have special causes that are close to them. And so we wanted to facilitate that in the Around the Bay. But I want to also mention that there's a lot of volunteer groups that support us with the water station staffing, with volunteers inside Cops Coliseum or First Ontario Center now. There are volunteer groups that have been there for over 20 years at those water stations, and generations have come and gone through those water stations. So we're really proud of the fact that they do want to come back. I mean, when you think about it, they're out in the cold for 5 to 6 hours, sometimes getting wet, sometimes, you know, all kinds of weather have passed through the Around the Bay over the years. And for them to come back year after year, I think is a testament to their commitment to the community, to the race, and to what they are as volunteers. So we're proud of that fact as well.
So beyond this fundraising commitment, what effects or impact do you see Around the Bay having on the local community? I mean, you talked about, you know, the incredible crowd support and the number of people that come out rain or shine to line the streets and show their support for the runners. But you've also partnered with some other pretty cool I understand sort of local artists and breweries this year. Can you kind of talk about the partnerships there?
You know, for our 125th, we wanted to do something special. And so we wanted to invite more community support. And so actually Dylan Swan, a local artist, came up to us and said, you know, I painted this one painting and I thought about doing a whole project and painting, you know, having an image for each of the kilometers. And some of this art is spectacular and it really captures the essence of the race. So he has now an exhibit at the art gallery, free and open to the public, where people can see, you know, different scenes of the around the bay and at different kilometers. And I can already see people saying, oh, that's the finish line. You know, I did this. And actually some people can see themselves because he took photos and painted from those photos. And then we also, you know, we all know that runners love beer. So we thought, who could we approach to be a partner? And Merit Brewing, who was started by Tej Sandhu, he's a runner and he started the Lower City Runners. And so I just asked him, you know, would you like to partner? Would you consider making a beer that was named after us? And he said, absolutely. And he even created a 4-pack. Each bottle has a space for your time. So that can also be a souvenir. And it's right on the route. So it was a perfect fit. You know, for the 125th, we brought back a souvenir program. So in the days of old, they used to have a program and, you know, listed the weekend's agenda and other little tidbits. But this year, what we did with the program is we have photos from over the course of the 125 years, stories of past Around the Bay winners that went on to Boston, some highlights from the participants that have done 20 bay races or more. So we've highlighted a few of those. We've also created, during the year, we asked participants to send in photos that we could maybe use in the program. But there were so many submissions that we created a photo wall. And so almost all of the photos that were submitted, we put on this 20-foot wall and people can come in and sign it, look at the photos that were submitted.
So it sounds like you've introduced these really cool new elements, these new partnerships. How do you feel about where Around the Bay is headed? Do you see what you're doing now as being the future of the event?
I think it's trying to balance the history and being fresh and new. Whenever you make any kind of changes or decisions, you often think, will this upset the loyal bay racers that have done it for so many years? And we've had participants doing it for 20 plus years. Actually, there's one gentleman who will be doing his 30th consecutive bay race this mm-hmm. year, Sean Chisholm. So I think that's the challenge, is trying to have a balance. We always recognize our past and highlight the runners and the participants from the old days, but also look at new ways to make it fun and fresh.
Do you have any really memorable experiences, any particular races or memories from the past, you know, 10 or 15 years that you can tell us about, something that's sort of stuck with you with Around the Bay?
There's a few. Certainly there was a wedding at the finish line one year. Yeah, that was pretty neat. We had a marching band a couple years ago to bring in the last runner. We've had people juggling all the way through. There was a juggler that did the 30K the whole time. You know, there's lots of costumes, great costumes. There's one runner from Burlington who changes it up every year. So one year he was a helicopter, like literally he had propellers and it was quite fun. And then one time he was all in balloons. One time he was a hot dog. So it's always interesting to see what he'll bring out. I just love the energy at the race. You know, you can really feel it at the start line. And I think that's what brought me to start running and to continue. And I look forward to many more years of watching people start and finish at the Bay Race.
Krista Duchesne is known as Canada's marathon mom. She's an Olympian, a dietitian, and a mother of three. She's also a veteran of Around the Bay. She's raced the grueling 30K event 9 times, 6 of which she finished on the podium. Last year, Krista placed 2nd, then gained huge international acclaim by gutting her way to a 3rd-place finish at the Boston Marathon. Krista is replicating her racing schedule this year, racing Around the Bay tomorrow, then heading to Boston in 2 weeks' time. This will be your 10th time racing Around the Bay. What's the significance of this race to you? Like, why do you keep coming back to it?
Well, for one, it's local. So with having a family, I can, you know, leave in the morning and basically be back around like noon or 1 o'clock and not miss a whole day on the weekend. And I think the second thing that I like is that it's just a really good, hard effort when you're preparing for a spring marathon.
Well, and on that note, you're doing Boston as well. And this year, the time between those two races is significantly shorter than it usually is. So how does that sort of fit into your build for Boston this year?
It definitely is something that Dave and I knew going into it, but we weren't overly concerned. This is just going to be my last long effort in terms of, you know, distance for marathon, goal pace, or whatever it is I decide to run on Sunday. I'm not one that has these like amazing workouts every couple of weeks. I'm kind of a grinder, get the work done, be consistent week to week. So I'm just seeing it as another opportunity to do that.
I have to ask this because they're named the same thing. How does Heartbreak Hill at Around the Bay compare to Heartbreak Hill at Boston?
I would say it's pretty close. I mean, the thing that I like especially about the Bay is that it prepares you for Boston with those hills at the end. So you just really have to mentally focus that the race isn't going to start until you hit those hills. And yeah, it's a great opportunity to practice that for Boston's layout.
So speaking of Boston, you had an incredible race at that event last year. If you don't mind taking us back, could you tell us a little bit about that experience, what it was like racing in those conditions and then placing as well as you did? Just sort of give us an overview of the experience at Boston last year.
Well, I went into the race strong and smart, not worried about what my watch said and trying to hit certain paces. I knew that I wanted just to run the race that I was prepared to run. And when we got there, we knew the conditions were going to be poor. And Reed Coolset, Eric Gillis, and I were sitting around the table with our little Canadian group. And we got talking, and I think it was Eric that said, you know, Krista, probably a lot of these women are not going to like the conditions. And I thought, you know, I have been thinking that. So sure enough, at the technical meeting, usually they'll say, well, during the race, the weather's not going to be that bad. You know, the wind's going to die down a bit or the temperatures are going to come up. But not in that case. They were saying this is going to be brutal exactly during the time that you're running. And that's when I started to think this might work well for me. So when we got into the bus, my goal was to stay dry and warm. And anything that was wet or cold, I was just changing my clothes and my socks. So by the time the race started, it was a really slow start. And I remember running with the lead pack and thinking, okay, I do not belong here. But I think our first K was like high 4 minutes something. So I knew we couldn't really go that much slower. And then I dropped from the lead pack a little bit just because I didn't want to get into these surges and head games and that kind of thing and just do my own thing. And then two American women passed me with a couple of K to go. And I thought I was just kind of behind the lead pack that was kind of dispersed and a few dropouts. I knew when they passed me, I had more to give. So I started running a little bit faster and harder. And then sure enough, I started passing those people that were to win the race. And, crossed the line, no idea that I was in third place.
That's incredible. That must have just been such a surreal experience. I mean, everything you're describing is so different from a typical racing situation. I can imagine that, you know, in a marathon, it might be difficult at times to get a sense of where you are, but that must rarely happen that you don't know that you've come third at a major marathon.
Right. I mean, I think I was hoping like this year, maybe to be top 15 and top three masters. So I remember at the beginning, kind of looking around and counting the people, and maybe I was 20th. And then, you know, as the race went on, a few dropped out. Of course, there's people that drop out that you don't even see them at all. You know, the ending was so chaotic with the weather and the wind, the rain, the crowds were screaming, Yuki's coming up behind us with the media trucks as because he's winning the men's race and our women's race was that much slower that they caught up to us. So I just remember like tunnel vision and I felt like I was starring in my own movie because I was running and I was focused and running strong. I think my last K was 3:30 per K, which was way faster than my average. And just finishing and being happy and excited and then starting to shake and have the effects of the weather and take its toll. I'm not going into Boston this year thinking I'm going to place third again, unless the weather is the same, which I would be thrilled to have that weather again. But you know, just being appreciating where I'm at in my career right now, and that, you know, it could be over and I'd be completely content with how it ends, but yet knowing that there still could be one surprise after the next.
A lot of the stories I heard coming out of Boston last year were obviously about that weather and about how if you were a Canadian or an American that trains sort of in the northern part of the country, you are obviously hardened by a lot of the conditions that you have to train in year round. And of course, Around the Bay is one of those races that falls just early enough in the year that it's pretty unpredictable in terms of what weather you could get. Do you find that there's any sort of correlation there with sort of the toughening that you experienced as a Canadian runner and maybe some of the toughness that you've garnered from Around the Bay in the past?
Yes, I'd say definitely the timing of the races, you can expect anything in terms of weather. I think just with Boston being a few weeks after the Bay, you know, you're likely going to have warmer conditions, but you need to be prepared for the worst. And, you know, I will pack clothes for like all four seasons for Boston. And, you know, because Around the Bay is local, I know what I'm going to wear that morning and I don't have to worry about my luggage and whatnot. But, you know, being a mom and being busy with other commitments, my speaking and being a dietitian, I only have, you know, one block in the day where I'm going to get my run in. If it's hail, rain, wind, a snowstorm, whatever it is, I have to go out there and I just do it without thinking. I can't wait around for the weather to get better or warmer or clear. So to me, it's just whatever it is, just you run through it. There's no use feeling sorry for yourself because everyone else has to do the same thing.
What are some of your favorite aspects of Around the Bay? What makes that race special for you?
I think I like its history. It's the oldest race in North America, so that makes it really special. Again, because it's close to home, I can sleep in my own bed and just drive, you know, to the start. It's an opportunity for people that live in the area to also drive and be close by to cheer people on in a race. And the distance is very unique. I mean, who else knows of a 30K race in this, you know, Southwest Ontario that you can do that compares to the Bay? And the timing is perfect for marathon training, in that most people, you know, have spring goals ahead, and whether it's April or May. So the history and the uniqueness of the this race is what makes it special.
You mentioned, obviously, when you're at Boston, sort of packing for all four seasons, and for those going to Around the Bay, again, most people will be a little more local, so they probably, as you will, know what they're going to wear that morning. What other advice do you have for people running Around the Bay for the first time?
Well, for many years, and I think it's still true to this day, that you should almost treat it like it's a marathon. It can be a really tough race with the wind and it being cold, and it's more like a marathon than anything. I mean, a half marathon, you can kind of get through, but it's tough. So treat it with respect and, you know, like any race, get ready and have the same routine that you would have before your long run. Stick to your plan with, you know, your fluids and gels and that kind of thing. And just take it as a good opportunity to allow yourself to iron out the wrinkles before you get to your, you know, key race, which is likely going to be a spring marathon.
I asked Krista what gets her most excited about this year's running of Around the Bay.
The depth of the elite field, especially for the women, is much greater than ever before. I mean, I don't think I will even place maybe top five. So it's great to see that this race is being added to a lot of elites' calendars for the racing season.
You know, I'm curious about that, this rise that we've seen lately of women's distance running in Canada. I mean, it seems to have just exploded over the last couple of years, really. Is there anything in particular that you would attribute that to? Like, what do you think is sort of at the core of that?
I think that a lot of the women that are succeeding right now at the marathon, and I mean, there's probably a dozen that have a good chance that could be named to the team for 2020 in Tokyo at the Olympics. They've been, you know, grinding it out for several years and finally seeing reward at the end. And I mean, I guess no doubt with Lainey and I making the team in 2016, after a 20-year absence, you know, maybe that's helped with the sport because people could look to us and say, okay, they did it and we can do it too. So I think maybe as well, women are able to balance, you know, careers and families and relationships with the running. And some are focusing on just running itself. And I think it's just quite a wide depth of women that are racing with different backgrounds as well that makes it quite interesting and exciting, ages and stages of life. It's a great place for women to be in sport right now. I'm very excited to see where it's going and where it's at right now.
And of course, we'll see that on display tomorrow morning at Around the Bay. So Krista Duchesne, we wish you the best of luck, both at Around the Bay and at Boston in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, thank you.
You're not going to make it. Oh, you don't need to worry. If the guy beside you is not going to make it.
Don't you wish you were doing a real race?
Watch out for this guy. Don't trip over him when he falls.
The guy behind you is going to catch you really soon.
Stop smiling.
Come on, you don't need to finish this race.
You're looking way too slow. And you look dead.
It's a 40K run. You lazy runners.
There has been a signature element of Around the Bay for the last 20 years. An ominous character who greets runners in the last few kilometers with an unconventional approach to cheering. Tim the Grim Reaper, whose non-reaping identity remains cloaked in secrecy, has stood in front of the Hamilton Cemetery about 3 kilometers from the finish line, rain or shine, for the past 2 decades. It's never quite clear if he's taunting or encouraging you, but love him or hate him, Tim the Grim is here to stay.
Yes, I am Tim the Grim. I am out at the 28K mark of the Around the Bay Road race, roughly the 28K mark, a little before that, actually, right near my favorite spot on the course, the Hamilton Cemetery. It's a perfect spot for people to come and visit and perhaps stay a while or stay forever.
How did this tradition start and why?
This actually started, there was a lady named Pat who was the first Grim Reaper. She, back in 2000, just before the race, she broke her leg and was trying to find a way to still be involved in the race, but wasn't able to run. So what could she do? Well, Pat is a little off the wall, obviously, because she came up with the idea of being the Grim Reaper out at the cemetery. So this was entirely her idea. She was a member or is still a member of the Burlington Runners. And a lot of Burlington runners go into the Around the Bay Road race. So she was out there to cheer them on, to give them something to laugh at and to give everybody else something to laugh at. And that was in 2000. And after that, she was able to run the race again. And so was looking for somebody to take up the robe for her. And magically, she thought of me, and I've been doing it ever since. 20 years of the Grim Reaper, 19 years for me.
That's quite a commitment. Are you a runner yourself?
I am. I've done a little bit of running in my past decades. I did run the Bay Race on the 100th anniversary, and that was the only time I have actually run it.
As road racing has increased in popularity over the last several years, you know, we've seen more and more creative signs and cheer squads from the spectators along, you know, race courses. But I sort of see you as like the anti-cheer squad. So what is it about sort of this sarcastic approach that you have? Like, what's that all about? Why did you or Pat decide that that was the way to go?
I think, well, part of it, the signs, as an example, that are out at the road near me that I put out every year, those were actually made up by Pat and other people who are part of the Burlington Runners Club called the Lunatic Fringe. So the Lunatic Fringe is a special subgroup of the Burlington Runners. Obviously, they are slightly off the wall as well, just like Pat. They came up with those expressions, and I took that to heart when I took over as the Grim Reaper to try to throw a little bit of a change into what the runners would have seen and heard along the course. Being a runner myself, it's all well and good for someone to say, good job, way to go. But when you're 20 kilometers into a race, you're not usually feeling it. 25 kilometers, you're really not feeling it, especially as you start going up that last little hill before the flats going into the last few kilometers of the race. So those last 4 kilometers are a little boring. They're very flat, no rolling hills. So what better way to throw a little bit of a smile on some people's face, a little bit of a challenge for other people, than to taunt them, tease them, you know, try to distract them from the pain that they've been feeling for the last 27-ish kilometers by the time they get to me, then by giving them a bit of a negative view on things. And some people take it to heart. And when I challenge them that they can't go any further, they dig down and do exactly that. They manage to finish, or they start running again if they've been walking for quite some time. So that's part of it, is to challenge them and to see if they will accept that challenge.
What are some of your signature phrases? What are some of the things that you enjoy saying the most, or that you get the most reaction from?
Most of the time, with the fast runners, I tell them they're going slow. I find that the lead runners generally ignore me, but once in a while, Reed, as an example, Reed Coolsat, a couple of years back when he was running it, he definitely was into it with me, which was great. Whereas a lot of other lead runners just generally kind of fly by and ignore me. Some people steer around me, in which case I just call them afraid or tell them I'm going to catch them anyway. Once in a while, I will chase after people, depending on how my own training has been going and whether I'm wearing boots or shoes that day. And often I tell people that, you know, I might point to somebody and say that you're not going to make it, or someone else isn't going to make it. But for me, it's kind of fun doing that, because the people who are struggling with the race, that's often what will really get them going. And that's a big purpose for me, is to get these people to finish the damn race so that I can go home.
She's looking bad. Very bad. The beard does not make you faster. Green is not your color.
One of the big things is that I'm out there from, you know, getting myself set up and positioned so that I'm there by the time the first runner comes by. And I try not to leave until the very last runner or walker has come in. If I can do that, I do. Some of the time, you know, life gets in the way, or if somebody is so far down the road and I can't really tell if they're in the race anymore, then I might have started packing up. But if I see that anybody is still on the course, then I'm there until the very last person goes by.
That's incredible. You must just go home and be exhausted, first of all, from being on your feet that whole time. And it's usually pretty cold, and you're sort of talking the whole time to people. And I mean, that's a lot of energy that you're expending.
I don't have much of a voice left usually after that. I'm usually pretty hungry and thirsty because I don't eat or drink while I'm out there. That's part of being the Grim Reaper, is we have to suffer along with everybody else.
That's good. Solidarity. I like that. Talking about the commitment and how long you've been doing this and how much goes into it on the day, why is this an important thing for you to do?
That's a good question. My wife asked me the same thing. I think part of it has to do with the fact that it has become a tradition. People, when they get to me, express how much they enjoy getting to me, getting to this spot in the race. Because after all, for them, they have run for a couple hours. So when they get to me, they know that it's only a couple kilometers to go, and it's generally downhill. Although I will tell people that it's all uphill from the time they reach me. I just found that being involved in this race has been something good for me as well. It gives me the chance to give back to the community. I've been running for a very long time, and so it's just one way that I can give back to the running community.
Given that you've been doing this for so long, and given that, you know, one of the things that I've been asking my other guests is, especially Mike, was also involved in it for a very long time, in sort of honor of this anniversary year, are there any particularly memorable experiences from your time in this role?
There have been so many. One of the ones that amazes me is someone, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, came up to me and said that they had cancer, were close to dying, and they were able to get through it and were cancer-free at the time they were running again. And that struck quite a chord for me, having had people I know who have passed away from cancer, then just having that acknowledgement that even something as scary as that, people can come back from. That was pretty amazing to be able to hear that story, and that the person would stop long enough to explain that to me was great. And then there's the number of people who stop for a photo is great, who stop and smile and take that little pause out of the stress of their race to be able to say hello, to thank me and snap a quick picture, and then on the way they are again. It's nice to have that experience with them as well.
If you're racing tomorrow, be sure to keep an eye out for Tim the Grim, give a cheer for Krista, say hi to Anna and Mike, and thank a volunteer on the course for all the hard work that goes into making events like Around the Bay possible for 125 years. And thanks for tuning in this week. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast. I'll talk to you soon.